Well, if it's not serious enough to go to a doctor because of needing pharmaceutical intervention or something at the doctor level, let's say, you kind of want to even out your emotions during the day, or you just want to, quote, feel better, I start to wonder, are we even handling this the best way? Maybe we need to just address our sleep so we handle day-to-day anxiety better. Maybe diet. Mm-hmm. It's like, are we numbing ourselves, for lack of a better word, versus just sort of figuring out better ways to deal with the real highs and lows of life, or figuring out what truly is the source of stress or anxiety?
Hello and welcome to the Consistency Project Podcast. My name is Patrick Cummings. As always, I am here with E.C. Sinkowski. Every week on the show, we aim to simplify the science of nutrition, health, and fitness, cutting through the noise to focus on the principles and practices that will help you perform better, feel better, and live better. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Hello, EC.
Hey.
What's happening?
Not much. How are you?
I'm wonders. We are going to get into something today, this week, that I say this all the time. I know literally nothing about this, so I'm excited to learn some things. We're going to dive into the potential benefits of something
called ashwagandha.
Ashwagandha. Which is a popular Ayurvedic, is that how you pronounce it? Ayurvedic?
I might be wrong.
And we're going to talk about its purported effects on stress, anxiety, depression, sleep, and body composition. And where I think we're going to dip into a little bit of our standard conversation around supplement quality as well, because it's always worth mentioning. Before we get into that conversation, which I'm excited about, a quick mention for the Three Pillars Method Masterclass. If you are ready to stop asking this question, how much should I be eating to reach my goals? Well, you can answer it by finally jumping into the Three Pillars Method Masterclass. What is it? You've heard us talk about it all the time. It's the 10-week nutrition masterclass that EC has been perfecting for years. It's designed to help you cut through the nutritional noise and get right to the heart of what it takes to eat well sustainably. As a listener to this here podcast, you understand the principles. We talk about them all the time, but it's now time to turn principles into practice, and doing it all under EC's guidance. Head to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass to jump in, or click the link in the show notes. I promise you, you will not regret it. Okay. As mentioned, I know nothing about this, so please start with the highest level. What is the background? Ashwagandha, what is it and why are we talking about it?
Yeah. So its botanical name is Withania somnifera. It's an evergreen shrub. It's cultivated in tropical and subtropical areas in Asia and Africa and Europe. And it's commonly called ashwagandha, which is a Sanskrit name, because the plant roots are said to smell like a wet horse. So ashwa is for horse and ganda is for smell. You know, you learn something every day here. But it's also known as Indian ginseng and winter cherry are those common names. But it has been used in traditional Ayurvedic medicine systems, which is native to India. And it's this premise under Ayurvedic medicine that disease is really due to an imbalance or a stress in the person's consciousness. And so treatment is really centered around these like mind, body, spirit connections type approaches to medicine. And so ashwagandha is commonly used in those Ayurvedic practices, but it's also part of a lot of these traditional medicine systems, like traditional Chinese medicine. Now, ashwagandha is also known as an adaptogen, which is kind of all the rage right now. I guess maybe not right now. It's been trendy for a little while. We're late to the bandwagon here, per usual. But out of the different adaptogens, I think ashwagandha is probably the most well-known or the most trendy. And so that's what we're talking about today, of course. But other adaptogens include things like ginseng and rhodiola rosa, holy basil, and different types of mushrooms, reishi, cordyceps, and lion's mane, which is the really cool name for a mushroom. But anyway, these are all different types of adaptogens. And the concept of adaptogen is that they're these non-toxic substances from plants that are supposed to increase your resistance to stress. And it could be a biological stress, it could be a chemical stress, it could be a physical stress. And then it will also normalize your body functions when stressed and kind of strengthen any system that might have been compromised by this stress. So that all sounds really good, but it's also really broad and vague. You know, there's so many things that could normalize body functions or help my resistance to stress. I mean, vitamin C helps the immune system. So would I say that anything with vitamin C is going to increase my resistance to stress, you know, is an orange an adaptogen? That's certainly not what the mainstream media means when they say adaptogens, but it's a really broad definition that a lot of things start to fit that category. And even like, how are we measuring the strength of the strengthening? You know, was I already strong enough to begin with? And then did the adaptogen give me how much more strength, and how are we measuring it? And then we also have to remember that not all stress is bad. You know, do I need this increase in resistance to stress when maybe the level of stress was just what's, you know, part of normal daily life? And so ultimately it could not be the end of the world to have this stress. So anyway, there really isn't a clear definition or consensus about what adaptogen is. And it's not a word that's used in, let's say, US kind of pharmacology to mean a specific mechanism. But nevertheless, these adaptogens are quite trendy, as I mentioned, because in our modern and busy lives that are just full of stress and anxiety, the question really is this going to be a natural solution to pharmaceutical drugs that we have for stress and anxiety? Is this a natural alternative to SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Zoloft, or is it an alternative to benzodiazepines like Xanax? And I can assure you that supplement companies and natural companies want it to be. It's already quite popular. There's over 1,300 products in the US with ashwagandha. It's the fifth most popular supplement, raking in more than $13 million a year. So as you mentioned, we're going to kind of look at its effects on stress-related disorders, anxiety, depression, and insomnia, and of course, body composition performance, which our audience always likes to hear about.
Dig it. Okay. One quick question just for clarification. You'd mentioned that these were considered like non-toxic substances. And then you talked a little bit about some pharmaceuticals. Are those two things like, are those basically saying like, we're not that, we're not pharmaceuticals, we're non-toxic? Or when we say non-toxic, or when they say non-toxic, does it mean something else worth mentioning?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a known plant-derived compound that doesn't have any obvious toxic effects. There are things I think we've talked about before, you know, from mushrooms you could eat and die. And so it's sort of these compounds that we believe are health promoting. And in fact, even in some of the research, the dose can be quite high and it's quite safe. So we're not really worried that somebody's going to take this and have an immediate negative response.
Got it. Okay. Can we get into maybe how or if it does ashwagandha work for stress, anxiety, depression, sleep, all that thing? What is it actually doing?
Yeah. And so before we get into that, it is important to point out this is kind of another gray area, you know, kind of the definition of adaptogens a little bit gray. And now how is ashwagandha working is going to be a little bit gray, because we believe that the reason that ashwagandha has these restorative qualities, it's from the bioactive phytochemical compounds, typically in the roots, although sometimes leaves, berries, and whatever are used as well. But those bioactive phytochemical compounds, we actually talked about them most recently in the Mediterranean Diet podcast. But in plants, there's thousands and thousands of chemicals that we haven't really identified them all, and we don't really know what they're all doing. And so we think that the good benefits of ashwagandha are coming from some of these phytochemical compounds. Now, some of them that are in ashwagandha go by the names of withanolides, withanosides, alkaloids, flavonoids, and phenolics. Now, when I say those five different words, I don't mean that there's five individual compounds. I mean that those are categories of different chemical compounds. And so within each of those names that I mentioned, there's tens and tens of individual chemical compounds. So within the withanolides category, for example, I saw a paper that has identified 70 different compounds. And so each of those 70 different compounds could have a different effect. They could each act like an individual drug. And so there might be multiple ways that ashwagandha is working because there's so many different compounds. So like when we think of ashwagandha, we just think of one thing, but there's so many different compounds that could be acting truly as independent drugs. The other thing that's difficult about looking at ashwagandha research is, you know, typically in these supplement studies, they take an extract of ashwagandha. So they, you know, take the root and then they mix it with a solvent. So they're trying to get these compounds out of the root. And depending on which technique they used, as well as the plant itself, where did it grow? What was its growing conditions? What's the variety? But that all of those different variables can really change the amount of the compounds that you have in your supplement, can change which ones you have, and can change the amount that you have. And so, you know, I haven't even started getting into your question yet. We're going to talk about how ashwagandha may work, but it's a little bit murky because it's like, well, what exactly is the compound that's working? And can we assume that when we see a study that was done with an extract, that that's going to be the same that you buy off your shelf? No, it's not. You know, and so we're kind of in the gray area of what's actually driving what.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to press forward, Patrick. We're going to press forward
with here. That caveat
with
in place.
That massive caveat in place. So the anti-stress activity is believed to be because ashwagandha seems to be able to decrease cortisol. So when somebody's stressed, cortisol goes up. And there is some research that shows that when people take ashwagandha, the cortisol response has decreased. The anti-anxiety effects are attributed to its GABA-related activity. Now, we actually talked about GABA recently in the sleep supplement podcast, but this is this gamma-aminobutyric acid. It's a main inhibitory transmitter for the central nervous system. And so what that means, it's inhibiting. It's, you know, making quiet. You could think about the chemical messages in your brain. So it's going to have this calming effect. And so ashwagandha may mimic or act like GABA. And this is similar to how benzos or benzodiazepines work for anti-anxiety. There's also the potential that ashwagandha works similar to SSRIs in that it potentially could increase the effect of serotonin. And so this is how it works for depression. Mm-hmm. And then finally, there's some belief that the phytochemicals in ashwagandha work for anxiety and depression, possibly by decreasing brain inflammation. And again, we're not really sure on what compounds would be driving that or exactly how that's working. But those are all different potential mechanisms that are kind of on the table of why we might be seeing some positive effects from ashwagandha for these outcomes.
You said you highlighted there, you emphasized potential there. What does the research say about its effect on anxiety, stress, depression, sleep, et cetera? I presume there are studies being done or have been done. What can we learn from those?
Yeah, so thankfully in 2022, there was a systematic review pulling together the research on ashwagandha and its management of anxiety and stress and looking at only research that was done with randomized controlled trials. So all of that sounds great. That paper will be in the show notes. But they had 12 different studies. It included in total about 1,000 participants across the different studies. And what they conclude is that ashwagandha supplementation did significantly reduce anxiety and stress compared to the placebo. And how did they measure this? I really like what they did in these studies. They were looking at what they call anxiety or stress scales. We kind of talked about this with sleep. When they're looking at an outcome, they might give you a survey to kind of rate how you feel. And this is really important versus, let's say, just measuring cortisol, because we actually want to know what the presentation looks like in the person. We don't just want to look at different lab biomarkers. We want to know how is the person feeling and responding to things in their day-to-day life. And so, you know, again, what they found is that ashwagandha supplementation did decrease stress and anxiety, which all of that sounds really promising. But when you're reading the systematic review here, they also let you know that the certainty of evidence was considered low.
Mm.
Because these studies are very preliminary and they're very different. Some people use different amounts of dosing. They use different length of time. They measure things in different ways. They might have used different target populations. And so at the end of this, they say further high quality studies are needed to firmly establish the clinical efficacy of the plant. And so at this stage, it's interesting. Yes, there's some early promising research, but not really at the level that I think is ready to make broad recommendations to use it. So that's for anxiety and stress. As for depression, what I saw that there's been 3 studies, two of which showed significant lowering of depressive symptoms, which again sounds great. But when we look at which populations they tested ashwagandha on for these depressive symptoms, they weren't with people who had major depressive disorder or even something like seasonal affective disorder. They looked at people that were either healthy or stressed, which really wouldn't be the population that you want to test to say, is this really affecting depression?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I also mentioned that we would touch on sleep. You know, I said that potentially ashwagandha can have a GABA-like effect. And so this is why some people are interested in it from a sleep perspective. And this is according to the Spears paper in the show notes. There have been 5 human trials with ashwagandha and sleep. And they also conclude that there's just too much variability between the studies. How are they measuring sleep? What are the variabilities in duration? What's the dose that they're giving people, that they're not able to give a conclusion about whether ashwagandha is really helping with sleep.
Mm. Okay. What about ashwagandha's effect on, or purported effect on, exercise or and or body comp?
We're continuing a trend here. Some early positive results, but really limited to kind of be able to say, I think, you know, you're definitely going to see an improvement like in strength or body composition, or even to be at the same level of something like caffeine or creatine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of studies there, and we're definitely just not at that same level of research for ashwagandha. You know, there are two studies I saw which did show an improvement in performance. They looked at leg strength with either a leg extension or one rep max squat, which is great. They also looked at upper body strength. So that's awesome. We have two studies that are showing some improvement in true performance outcomes. But it's like less than 100 people total, you know, pretty small scale here. And then there were the same two studies looked at body composition as well. One found that ashwagandha did improve total body composition. The other one didn't. So it's kind of a wash in which way it's going. Interestingly enough, there have been a couple studies that have shown an increase in testosterone by taking ashwagandha. So there's maybe the thought that, okay, maybe by way of some increasing of testosterone, this might help improve strength, which maybe then over time increases muscle mass to improve body composition. But this is all like, you know, reading, what is that phrase? Like reading the tea leaves or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. kind of really at this point, very preliminary to be making hard recommendations.
Mm. You mentioned creatine and caffeine, which are in our worth a shot bucket, TM.
Yeah.
I'm presuming that ashwagandha is not going to be the third in our lineup of products.
Not yet. No, I don't think it's in the bucket yet. I do think that there are more risky things you can do in your life than taking an herbal supplement to see if your one rep max squat improves. But, you know, there is a difference between that and me being able to say, no, I would recommend this broadly as something worth a shot. And there's a few different reasons. One, you kind of hinted at the beginning of the podcast. We've talked about the supplement market a ton and how variable the products can be in terms of their actual concentration as well as potential contamination. And so, again, it kind of goes back to this issue to me is, even if some of these studies are showing, okay, ashwagandha is effective, how do we know that's what you're buying at your local natural grocer or online? Mm-hmm. We don't. Mm-hmm. We don't. There's so much variability in the way that they get these compounds out and just the way the supplement industry is regulated, that we have no way to say that you were going to be buying the supplement that showed X effect in Y study. And it's very different than caffeine or creatine, which are these isolated single compounds. We're talking about a potential mixture of compounds where we don't really know which one's doing what's the magical mixture is, all of that stuff. And I do want to say that in these studies, they often talk about standardized samples. Like, they actually go through a protocol to make sure that what they're giving each person is meeting a certain kind of quality reference line. It's not going to be the same. And, you know, as an example, I took a peek at Consumer Lab's website for ashwagandha. They're, you know, they rate supplements based on quality. And they basically found that 56% or half of the supplements for ashwagandha contain the concentrations that they thought would be there. Mm-hmm. Right. So
flip a coin.
Yeah. Flip a coin if you're going to get what you think you're going to get. And then, of course, contamination. This is the Hardin paper in the show notes, but found that 20 to 65% of Ayurvedic medicines available online contain detectable lead, mercury, or arsenic to levels exceeding standards. Now, they say Ayurvedic medicine, so they weren't specifically saying ashwagandha only, but of course, ashwagandha is going to be some of the samples that they do. And this is the Mikulski paper in the show notes. They analyzed 250 Ayurvedic products and supplements, almost half the samples containing mercury, 36% of the samples containing lead, and 39% of the samples containing arsenic, had concentrations of those metals that exceeded up to several thousand times greater than the daily intake values that would be allowed for pharmaceutical impurities. So really, a potential here to be exposed to a higher dose of heavy metal contamination from taking a product that you think is going to be healthy. So that's one thing. Again, we have this wide open supplement market. Don't know what's in it. Don't know if it's contaminated. The other thing for me is, you know, if we're considering this as an alternative to something like benzos or SSRIs, I just pause and think maybe the individual should be going to a doctor.
Mm.
And maybe the doctor ultimately tries ashwagandha with them, and maybe they have great success with ashwagandha, and I'm all fine with that. But I'm just sort of thinking to myself, if this is severe enough that we're considering this as an alternative to prescription drugs, shouldn't we deal with this with a qualified doc to make sure the diagnosis is right, to make sure that the right course of action is going on, and to also consider things like, are they on other medications which these herbs can interact with and have adverse effects? So there's that makes me kind of pause and not want to recommend them. And then the third and kind of final thing is, well, if it's not serious enough to go to a doctor because of needing pharmaceutical intervention or something at the doctor level, let's just say you kind of want to even out your emotions during the day, or you just want to, quote, feel better, I start to wonder, are we even handling this the best way? You know, maybe we need to just address our sleep so we handle day-to-day anxiety better. Maybe diet. Mm-hmm. Talk about that once or twice too, you know? It's like, are we numbing ourselves, for lack of a better word, versus just sort of figuring out better ways to deal with the real highs and lows of life, or figuring out what truly is the source of stress or anxiety? And so for me, I just have a hard time coming up with the rationale for why I would recommend this broadly. You know, it's maybe we're not at the level to go see a practitioner about our anxiety and stress, so then let's figure out the diet and lifestyle interventions that better manage the existing anxiety and stress. And so, yeah, there's just a lot of weaknesses for me, from not knowing what's going on to our supplement industry, to contamination, to are we handling our anxiety and stress in the most comprehensive way, to really preliminary research that at this point, no, I'm not broadly recommending adaptogens, specifically ashwagandha, and they're not going in the worth a shot bucket yet.
I think my only follow-up question to all of that was, or is, you know, something we've talked about a lot, which is this belief that natural is always better. Mm. And this strikes me as like a prime example of people saying, well, if it's coming from a plant, it must be better than that medication or that medication or whatever. Is that, like, again, because I have no experience of really even looking at these, is that kind of the implicit argument that all, whatever, you know, I think you said like 1300 products on the market that they're all making, which is like, hey, it comes from a plant. The implicit assumption is therefore it's good for you.
Totally. Totally. I think what people forget about pharmaceutical regulation is they have to maintain really strict standards of what's the dose in the thing, what compound is there, what compounds are not there, such that in many ways it could be considered more safe than natural supplement products, mm-hmm. because it's so regulated to make sure that it's exactly what they're supposed to be. And yeah, I think all the time, that was actually one of the papers, I briefly mentioned it about adverse effects, but I get really concerned about people who may already be on anxiety and stress meds, and they're the type of consumer looking for this. And so they're like, well, it's natural, I'll just add it. Well, go look up adverse events from combining herb supplements with true pharmaceutical drugs and check out what they are. I mean, there's very real ones for ashwagandha, right? And that's just like, I think people think, oh, this will be a great natural remedy. And it might not be. It might not be. And so I think this is another case where we're out over our skis a little bit. That's the phrase, you know, it's exciting. We have some early promising research, but we're certainly not in the place to say, oh yeah, everyone should just go take this and oh, it's natural, you'll be fine.
Thank you, EC, as always. All right, my friends, before we wrap up, one more reminder about the Three Pillars Method Masterclass. Head to optimizemenutrition.com/masterclass to learn all about it and to jump in for yourself. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. EC and I will be back next week for another episode of the Consistency Project podcast.